Welcome back to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here. As the nation mourns the fallen children and teachers of Sandy Hook Elementary School as the most recent of the rampages and mass shootings this nation has experienced, and as Congress takes up the fight for legislation to prevent more gun violence, many in the world of health care feel that they must take a stand against gun violence as a public health crisis that claims far too many lives. Joining me this morning is Dr. Fahd Ali, assistant professor of surgery at Upstate Medical University, with his own unique perspective on this very crucial issue. Welcome, Dr. Ali. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you for having me.
So help us understand your perspective on gun violence.
I think that gun violence is a symptom of the underlying problems that face our society today. Things have gotten worse, and it's not just about guns. Guns are an instrument that's used. There are other ways to hurt people. And while I applaud many of the laws that have been passed, they are just treating a symptom of the underlying issues at hand. In the last 5 years, in our own Syracuse area, we've had 290 gunshot wound victims come here. Of those, only a fraction are rifle injuries, such as the ones that have been banned. In that same 5 years, we've had 547 significant stab wound victims and 496 pedestrians struck, many of them by intoxicated drivers or drivers who should not have otherwise been operating a vehicle.
So in your role as a trauma surgeon, that's you're kind of reflecting what you see every day and the kinds of violence that occur in our society. And you're not just limiting it to guns. You're saying stabbings as well.
These are not just reflections of every day. This is a total over 5 years.
Right.
These are hard numbers that can't be avoided. To me, it shows that there is a underlying problem. There's a issue that needs to be addressed that no amount of laws can change.
And help us understand what your thoughts are as the underlying problem. You were mentioning at one point the structure of the family, the fact that we perhaps glamorize violence in our society.
Well, it used to be that we glamorize violence in our video games. We glamorize and desensitize to awful sights that no one should see. There are things that people see routinely on television and on their video games that I used to see in the operating room, but now are seen routinely on television. Take the Saw movies, not to single anyone out, but Saw and its genre and all its sequels, people should not be able to see that. People should not glamorize that. In the old days, such movies would have been NC-17. Now they're mainstream. Movies where drugs and alcohol, intoxicated driving, prostitution, and other things that have degraded the U.S. culture have become quite commonplace.
It's very interesting because obviously there are many people who feel just as you do, but there, you know, we do live in a free society where we have the right to free speech and we do have the Second Amendment allowing people to bear arms. So there's always this dynamic tension between, you know, what we can and should do as what our rights are as citizens of this country versus the need for some regulation or some modification of all of those freedoms. I mean, that seems to me part and parcel of just living in a culture that we're in a democratic society. So what would you do differently? What are you proposing or what are you thinking?
I think there should be a more focus on the social issues, the individual. We should seek to correct behaviors. We should offer more guidance. We should seek those who have mental issues and are mentally disturbed. We should find a way to help them come up with solutions to their underlying problems that are bothering them. We should reinforce the notion of role models. I understand that a lot of families are broken. The divorce rate is extremely high in this country. Those are issues that go beyond this conversation, and everyone has their own perspective. But what's happened is the role model figure is often lost, and without any guidance, any example to young people to aspire to, that vacuum is filled up with movies such as Saw, gangster culture, and glorifying drug dealing and prostitution, and
the dark side.
And an easy short-term gratification.
Yeah, it is a problem, though, as you pointed out, and clearly you're not alone in that thinking. I think the president's subcommittee, the vice president's committee, has also been recently talking to the video game industry, for example, and perhaps what's going on in Hollywood as well, because they recognize a lot of the same things that you're pointing out. The difficulty is, in a free society, where do you draw the line as to what people can and cannot do?
The video game industry and Hollywood are business people. They're catering to a demand. They're catering to a demand that has been found to become acceptable. And so they're trying to make a profit off of it. If there was no demand for such games and such video and such movies,
Well, that's their argument.
Then they would not exist. And once again, we're treating a symptom if we start to say, you can't do this and you can't do that. The underlying problem is it's become so glorified at this point that it needs correction on the level of the individual. The individual needs to come on their own, needs the reestablishment of principle and values. Not, I won't say family values, I won't say American values, I'll say basic core values that enable them to be a productive member of society.
Well, so you've been involved locally at trying to quell some of this gun violence. I understand you've been very active, not just the gun violence, but violence in general. Tell us about some of your efforts.
Well, just a little bit of history. In my first 2 years here, on Halloween night, I was on call, and multiple GSWs and stabbings came in.
GSWs.
Gunshot wounds. Gunshot victims came in. And I was kind of appalled, because I had trained in big cities, and I can tell you, I had not seen this amount of violence in those cities as I have in Syracuse. Considering the size of Syracuse, that to me pointed that there is a problem. I think that in my first year as an attending physician here, I saw more penetrating trauma than I did in my last 5 years. It shocked me, rightfully so. And at that time, there was an article published about the experience, and I called out to the community that maybe I would like to establish a program, if I could, that would help educate the youth at an early stage before they moved on to what I call acts of violence that can't be taken back. So we partnered with Mike Atkins, who's part of Citizens Actions Project, and we now go into our correctional facilities. And we find offenders who are either awaiting sentencing or sentenced already, who have committed not so heinous crimes that can't be taken back. We try to get to them early. You can't just stab somebody. You can't just shoot somebody and run away. There are consequences. We have family members of victims come, kind of try to give them a little bit of empathy, kind of make them understand that not only are you inflicting great injury onto somebody else and you run away, they almost never stay, but you're also, that woman who's weeping could be your mom, could be your sister, could be your aunt, could be your daughter. The lack of empathy is what I found to be a common theme. One young gentleman during this, one of our, I won't call it a lecture, but I'll call it one of our sessions where we discussed everyone a little bit, said, well, I have to defend myself at 2 a.m. And the response of everyone there was, why do you have to go out at 2 a.m. on a school night?
So there's a lot to the system. Many have said, I mean, I applaud your efforts and obviously just trying to reach some of these young people, but many have said that are one of the major problems in our country at this point is that we have a very broken mental health system, if a system at all.
I don't think there is a system. I'm not a psychiatrist, and I'm not the one to ask about the particulars about such. But I will tell you, I have found that our own capabilities in the local area are not sufficient to meet the demands of our nonviolent offenders, people who are at risk of violence. We know there's a backlog. We do not have sufficient facilities. And it's not a broken system, it's the lack of a system.
Yeah, and at one point there was deregulation.
Yeah, it was deregulated to the point where it no longer exists. And each individual facility has some, has a may or may not have a psychiatric unit, may or may not have a psychiatry department. My understanding is that there's no cohesive system left.
It's interesting because much of what you've been alluding to often are people who are identified by through the criminal justice system as being perpetrators of violence. But clearly, some of these major mass shootings the high profile ones, these are often people who may not have been identified previously, or perhaps have been, but nothing was really done. These are people who've been mentally imbalanced in some way. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, in no way am I taking any sides on the Second Amendment debate, but I did go through the numbers. In the last 62 major mass shootings in the last three decades in our country, which, believe me, is an unheard of number, 48 of those people, the perpetrators, had clear evidence of mental illness that was obvious pre-incident.
But ignored. In some
ignored,
ways.
Not picked up, or inadequately treated. Only in four of those was there no question whatsoever. And in the others, there were signs that were not really conclusive. But overall, if you look at it, the overwhelming number of those people had probably cried out for help, had symptoms that were not picked up.
And that really does, that's most troubling. But how do you feel then about some of these other initiatives that they're looking at now? For example, universal background checks. Would that, for example, pick up someone who is mentally imbalanced? If not to treat them, at least to limit them from basically purchasing a firearm. Or the whole idea of the ban on high magazines, capacity magazines, or the notion of banning assault weapons. What are some of your thoughts there?
Well, like we alluded to, just because you have the First Amendment does not give you the right to shout fire in a crowded movie theater. Yes, there should be, if you are a felon or mentally unstable and deemed mentally unstable by a qualified professional with another one in agreement, yes, there are grounds that you need to protect society more than the individual right in that one case.
So you are in favor of those kinds of limitations?
Well, universal background checks, absolutely. Criminals and unstable people should not have firearms in any way. The issue of the high-capacity magazines, it takes 1 second to change a magazine from that holds seven rounds. That's not going to help the eighth victim, is it? No. So that's just a feel-good measure. And as far as assault rifles, if you think about it, all firearms are meant for assault, either defense, either hunting, self-defense, or target practice.
So you are not looking, I mean, in the very little bit of time we have left, at this point you're saying it's like a cry to reach out to those people who are having more of the society problems, the social problems, and we really need to address those as the primary focus of any effort to control gun violence.
If you're going to control violence, not just gun violence, you have to address the underlying course and causes.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in. I applaud your efforts, and I really support a lot of what you're saying here, and I hope that you continue in these efforts. My guest has been Dr. Fahd Ali, trauma surgeon and assistant professor of surgery at Upstate Medical University. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more HealthLink on Air right after this short break.